plate a potential nugget.
And moving to a different theme, Katie, in this podcast earlier, I was speaking with Tom Vanderbilt, who's written a book called Beginners, where he speaks about how young infants learn to walk. And he actually goes on to say the real meaning of the term baby steps is not just taking small steps, but it's taking steps in different variety of conditions. And you know, babies actually randomize a lot of the movements and try walking in different situations to build a walking habit. And you say something similar in the context of, you know, to use your words, routine Rachels and flexible Fernandos. And you actually say that the climate in which we form a habit, there needs to be a certain variation for it to stick. So can you talk a little bit about the nuance here?
Yeah, no, I love that you brought that up too. The age-old wisdom on habits is that you want to repeat the same behavior in a really consistent way. Sort of, you need to find a cue, like a time of day or a location where you always perform this behavior, and as much consistency as you can create around its performance, the better. Then you perform the behavior, you reward it, and you repeat. And the more often you do that, the stronger a routine or a habit you'll build. And I did this study that I thought would get at that. It was a study where we were trying to build exercise habits actually among Google employees, about 2,500 of them who wanted to create habits around the start of a new year, fresh start effect. And we either coached them to engage in the behavior, in this case, exercise, and we paid them to do it. We rewarded them for it, either in a really consistent way, like same time of day whenever they did it, or we encouraged more variety in the way that they engaged in the behavior. So over the course of a month, some people basically are coached to go to the gym always at the same time and ended up making about 85% of their workouts at a consistent time that they had planned in advance, let's say 7 a.m. If, you know, for a person in our example was their ideal time, they 85% of their workouts over the course of this month are at 7 a.m. then. And another group of people also picked their ideal time, but they're encouraged to go whenever they want. And as a result, about half of their gym visits end up being at their ideal time, let's say 7 a.m. The other half are at other times. So the question we were interested in is, this month ends, we've sort of helped people train up a habit, or we tried to, but whose habit will be stickier? If both groups go at the same rate, will it be the people who were mostly visiting the gym at the same time, or people who had more variety in when they did it? We expected actually it would be better to have more consistency, that that would build a more consistent habit. But when we analyzed the data, what we found is we were wrong. So two people, they've gone to the gym in equal frequency for a month, but in different patterns. One is going at the same time all the time. The other's going all over the place, you know, at different times. We see that the person who has more variety ends up going more after this month ends. And the reason is really simple, it turns out, in our data. The people who had been going really at the same time over and over again had formed a really rigid routine. So they were actually a little bit more likely to go at their 7 a.m. gym time, the time that was best for them on average, at the end of this period. So after they had formed a habit around that. But if they didn't go then, they didn't go at all. So, you know, something comes up. I miss my 7 a.m. workout. I throw up my hands. I can't make it. I miss my 7 a.m. workout. That's it. The people who had been more flexible in when they went to the gym, sometimes they went at 7, sometimes went at 5, they go a little bit less at 7 a.m., right, at their usual time after this sort of month-long habit building period ends. But if they miss their 7 a.m. workout, they still get to the gym. So they go at noon, or they go at 5, and net-net, they actually have built a more robust habit. So this was really surprising to us. What we were expecting is that consistency that would build habit. And what we found is it was actually rigidity that we were building, and that flexibility proved so important to getting the thing done that you're trying to do on a regular basis, and that we need to have flexible habits. So a first best time to go and a backup plan is what really proved to be important for getting through this particular goal. And I think there's many goals like that. If you think about exercise or meditation or language practice or you know, whatever it is you're trying to do on a regular basis, that if you can build flexibility into a routine, that net-net may be a much better way to make sure the thing gets done than a really rigid routine.
To provide a little bit of context to the question that I asked Katie, This is the extract from my conversation with Tom Vanderbilt, where he speaks about how babies learn to walk. We spend a lot of time sometimes talking about a certain number of reps to build a habit, but we forget to pay attention to whether we're building a robust habit or if it's brittle. Here's Tom speaking about this piece of insight.
So I went to New York University, something called the Infant Action Lab, and one of the things they study quite a bit is how babies learn to move. And there's sort of a process they go through where they will first just try to sit up a little bit, then they might start crawling, doing these various half, you know, crawling. Then they'll try to make this move toward walking. And, you know, it's very interesting in terms of a learning process because they, you know, sort of violate a lot of the things you hear about. You know, they don't really have a specific timetable in mind or a goal. When researchers have tried to figure out where babies are even walking to, they really can't identify. They seem to be walking for the sheer pleasure of walking and to sort of practice it in a sense because, and there's even some question as why babies learn to walk when they can really often get around pretty well by crawling. And in a sense, learning to walk provides that much more learning opportunity because you can see more of the world, you can reach other destinations, you can interact more directly with a caregiver. So I almost think there's sort of a larger hunger for learning there going on. And importantly, you know, that we don't give babies drills in how to walk or exercises. We just sort of leave them in a room and in the house and they try it on their own. And, you know, through this process of just simply trying, and there are a lot of, speaking of 10,000 hours, I mean, it takes, you know, 5 years or so to become a proficient walker. So there's clearly a lot of work that goes on, even though we've sort of forgotten about that. But as part of that, there's an immense failure rate. The researchers I spoke to had filmed babies, you know, falling 30 or 40 or even up to 70 times in an hour while trying to walk. And then they would simply shrug it off and get up and start walking again. And so there's something about, you know, and their whole practice of learning is very sort of seems very random and playful and experimental. And they're never really trying the same thing twice because that wouldn't be a good way to learn for them because walking is often not the same thing moving around. And there's a famous Russian movement scientist named Nikolai Bernstein who called it repetition without repetition. And this means when you're trying to solve something like walking or how to juggle, you don't simply want to do the same thing all the time because that is a very brittle practice.
Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com. If you want to tune into the conversation with Tom Vanderbilt, you could just go to playtopotential.com and look for Tom in the guest section.